And we're back, Scott with Sheldon and Lloyd, and Jay behind the wire is doing all the keeping us sounding good stuff over there. Thank you, Jay.
My pleasure.
During the break, Sheldon shared something with us, and I asked him if he would share it again. He said absolutely. It's to do with, again, with part of his upbringing and being poorly treated by someone who claimed to be of faith and kind of determined how this man, Sheldon, would look at spiritual things or godliness in the future. So would you repeat that for us?
Yes, thank you, Scott. So when I came to the program, I was spiritually like broken. I grew up in a Christian home, and my mom has been a Christian her whole life, and my stepfather was a Christian as well. And I just remember my mom would teach me how to pray when I was a little kid, to go on my knees and put my hands together and say the Our Father prayer.
Yep.
And the things I didn't understand is that throughout the week, my stepfather was physically abusive to me and my mom, and he was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And he would destroy the house, and on Sundays we would go to church, and Sundays would always be a good day because I guess for that one day he actually has God in his life. And you know, for me, it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense why, you know, as a young kid I was going through these things and I wasn't happy, but at the same time my mom always taught me to believe in God, and like I felt like I was being spiritually abused for many years, because like as a little kid I would say to myself, like, does God, you know, like violence? Because like, you know, it was just violent 6 days a week in my household.
Wow. And you actually, you were saying you actually would try to cover your body with magazines so that you...
Yeah, you know. I had a curfew. My curfew was 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would come home around 12 o'clock, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and my stepfather would be up waiting for me drunk, and he would tell me, like, he was sick. He would tell me to go get the belt. Sometimes I would hide his belt, and then he would grab my Sega Genesis. It's like a game console, and he would start whipping me with that. Then I would hide that, and then when he couldn't find nothing, he would just like start wailing on me with his fists, and he'll bring me into the laundry room where it's like more quiet, and then he would just like beat me up. And it got to the point where my buddy's like, you know, you should probably hide magazines in your garage so when you go home you could tape the magazines on your body so you could kind of block the blow so they won't hurt, because the next day my skin will be swollen, like all the welts on my skin from just getting beat by him. And yeah, so you know, like he did the same thing to my mom too. Like when he came home on a Monday after work, he was a construction worker, and my mom gave him leftovers from Sunday, he would flip the table over and start beating her because she didn't cook fresh food. And then that night my mom will be all bruised and bloody, and she'll tell me to make sure that I pray. And I'm just like, I don't get it then. I don't get it.
Wow. And what became of this fellow? I know, you know, I'm afraid to ask because you, in my book, you probably had the right to off him.
So when I was 15 years old, my mom was screaming in the kitchen one night, and I ran to the kitchen, and he was drunk, and he was trying to stab her. He grabbed the butcher knife from the knife block, and he was trying to stab her in her stomach, and she was holding his hand, trying to push the knife away. And then I had enough at that point, and I ran, and I attacked him, and I grabbed his arm, and he pushed me out the way. And I called my neighbor, who was a weed dealer, and I told him, I pretend, so my stepfather knew who he was, I pretend to call him, actually, and I told him to bring his gun over, and he dropped the knife and pushed me out the way and called 911, and he told the cops, the York Regional Police, that my stepson is trying to shoot me. And then the ETF came to the house. And when the ETF came there, they handcuffed me. And then my mom didn't say anything until they came into the kitchen and saw my mom's face and saw the knife on the floor and blood everywhere. And they arrested him. And he ended up doing 4 months, I think 3 months in jail. And then my mom and him got divorced when I was 16. Yeah, so my mom was frightened of him. She didn't even say until the cops had to investigate to realize that she was the victim. And I was just defending her. She was afraid of him.
Well, what a story. Yeah, thank you so much for telling it. It's got to be uncomfortable. But folks, you know, that's what people who care do. And, you know, I often have this talk with people out in the world of social media, you know, and I tell them... you know, sharing makes all the difference in the world, and you know, and I don't personally care individually what anyone is or does or anything else, but for God's sake, when you hear something that you know can help somebody, you make sure you share this thing. You know, even if you got a bunch of friends who you don't want to know you've ever looked at anything in the realm of addiction or mental illness or so on, you make sure you share this stuff, you know, and if you don't, you know, and I hope I convict you. You know, you're guilty almost of murder in a sense, because you could have saved lives and you determined that it wasn't something you could do. So thank you very much, Sheldon.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that, you know, that's another reason why Sheldon and I have embarked on this, you know, generating this YouTube channel and telling a story through the YouTube. And, you know, because I often say that, you know, your story might be the story that somebody needs to hear.
Has to hear it.
And so we've embarked on this journey where we make, you know, some YouTube videos that we put out there, and they're unedited and not. And you know, but they're real life, and you know, a few people have phoned in and said, "Yeah, you know, thanks for putting that out there. Yeah. It made me a little bit more comfortable. Yeah. You know, I was in that position, so it's good."
No, it is good. And anything you do in that, you know, along those lines, and I agree with you, you know, sometimes we can't wait for the polish to make a difference in the life. Yeah. We've just got to put stuff out there, you know, and I do it all the time, too. And I mean, some would see it as, you know, not so professional. Well, I see it as life-saving, and I don't have time to polish. You know, the life might expire during the polishing season, and I just don't think that's right. And Lloyd, I mean, your life too, you know, everything you've lived. I don't think you got into that so much, though, as Sheldon. I mean, I don't know if you did or not, being beaten and pushed around.
My life is almost similar, and some of the wounds are still open, Scott. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the wounds are still open. I can't even really tell my story, my entire story. You know, I told bits and pieces of that, but, you know, like I met my mom at 8, and... You know, I really didn't know my dad until like December, and I'm well into my 50s.
Yeah, December now. Yeah, get that, folks. This guy is over 50.
Yeah. So, you know, and when I did get when I did find my birth certificate, there's a father's name on it that I don't even know. I've never met this guy, and so, you know, my story is almost similar with a lot of roadblocks like Sheldon's. Yeah. But I'm using it to my advantage instead of my disadvantages. The reason I can tell parts of it is to help somebody else that was, you know, on that similar journey. So it's not that
bad.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like your story, what fascinated me is the mom who, you know, realized at some point things weren't right, and she had come to Canada, I guess, and here she decided, I don't know how many years later, I better bring my son over here.
Yeah, so, actually, I actually came with my grandmother and my grandfather, my aunt, my uncles, and you know, I thought my grandmother was my mother until I came to Canada.
But I mean, then she gets you.
Yeah.
And a few years later, she's a preacher on top of it.
Yeah, she's a Pentecostal minister even today.
Yeah.
And
she boots you out a few years later.
Yeah. You know, met at 8, couldn't bond, then tossed out at, 16, and, you know, grew up on the streets, and, you know, which led to my addiction. And, wow. You know, it's a story and a half.
So amazing. You know? And don't we grow as we come together and talk about different things like this? And, you know, we know it's right to do what we're doing. And, you know, if we use the right word or not, does it become secondary? You know, it doesn't really matter because, we, you know, we come here with the heart of helping people, right? You know, Lloyd's always talking about giving back, and Sheldon feels the same way. And so do I. I mean, I feel for whatever goodness I've had in life, I wanna share the not so good stuff. And you know, we every meeting in the jail, I show a picture of my son and I together in happy days, and you know, and he's not with us anymore. And as sad as that is, it gets right to the heart of people, especially in jail, because so many of them, like Lloyd, have lost so many people. And my biggest enemy in this world is fentanyl and carfentanyl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was telling Sheldon and Lloyd on the way up here that last week we had a meeting of 12 women. And when asked not only how much they knew about fentanyl, whether they've used it or not, but how many have actually used it, overdosed, been brought back to life by either, you know, somebody with a Narcan kit or... emergency services have actually been brought back, and 9 of the 12 hands went up. And I thought, and most were, you know, repeat offenders. They didn't only get overdosed once, they did it several times. And then several of them were talking about, and as soon as I get out, I'm going right back to get some more. Wow. I'm thinking, you know, like that's beyond insane. Reasoning, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
That's the epidemic we're up against out there. I mean, a month and a half ago, New York City busted a huge ring and found enough to kill 59 million people.
Wow.
Now, what if some, you know, nutcase or some area of different societies or whatever decides to get a hold of this powder and not only mix it in with other drugs, but... put it either in the food system or the HVAC ventilation systems of towers and different things like that. I mean, this stuff could wipe out in no time.
Half the world.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe it's not the missiles we have to worry about so much. Maybe we need to think about this stuff and not only be concerned with the addict and his or her problem, but with what can be done with a substance like this. And, you know, we talk fentanyl killing everybody. Carfentanyl is 100 times more powerful than fentanyl. And it was made to calm down elephants, you know what I mean? And, you know, people are taking that. And if you look at three vials, one of morphine, one of fentanyl, one of carfentanyl, you'll go from, like, kind of a full... a vial down to just a little bit of powder in the bottom of a vial down to 3 or 4 grains, you know, from morphine to fentanyl to carfentanyl. And that's what people are playing with, and that's what sick drug dealers are putting into the system. So, you know, and mixing with the things you guys used to take and I used to take, you know. So, I mean, I don't know, guys, where we're going, but we got to do a wrap in a couple of minutes. And any last-minute thoughts? I know you had something on the tip of your tongue. I don't know if you still want to go.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, so, you know, coming into the program, I had a lot of resentments with, you know, a lot of people in my past. And the sponsor that I was actually working with, she, you know, helped me, you know, she helped me deal with, you know, the resentments that I had with these people. And actually, I prayed for these people and I actually forgiven them, you know. So that's how I was able to move forward with my recovery today.
That's wonderful. And as we said, that's the only way to get by these negative aspects of our life, these these defects, if you want to call them that, is finding the opposing value. And in this case, it's forgiveness. And Sheldon's gone beyond that, even forgiving them and wishing them the best in life. And folks, don't wait for a feeling to do these things. Just do them, because feeling may come, may never come. I mean, just remember that your feelings are really a summation of who you are, as opposed to reasons to make decisions. And you know, if we base our life and our decisions on our feelings, we're gonna make it. We're gonna be a mess. We've just gotta, you know, find a tool that puts us in the right vein. And you know, Scripture taught me many years ago that basically, and you know, unless we're mentally ill, and most of us are that too, but you know, if we're somewhat stable, we know what's right and what's wrong pretty much. So, you know, let's just do the right thing. You know,
I just want to say thank you for having me on the show. The shows allow me to grow, and I look forward to coming back. And
Thank you, Scott. Well, and Jason.
You'll both be back. And Jay certainly will. And for folks out there, we all need prayers, but I want to ask you a favor to keep Jay in prayer. He's had a fistula installed in one of his arms that would be used should he have to go on dialysis, which if he doesn't get a kidney donor in the next while, doesn't hear about one, that could be the case. And also the fistula just put in is not working, Jay told me on the way over here. So a lot of prayer for Jay, and pray for a kidney, and pray for a miracle with this fistula that all of a sudden it works. And what that does, my understanding anyway, is it's a connection to your blood system, to the the main arteries, I guess. And
exactly.
So you can have blood removed and replaced and removed and replaced and cleaned several times a week for many hours at a time. And it's a rough go. I've been with people doing it, and Jay's done it before. We want to keep him out of that if we can. So your prayers are welcome and sought after, and, in the name of whatever you believe in, you pray for this guy. So,
thank you so
folks,
much, Scott.
Thank you all very much for joining me on Sharing the Burden, and I look forward to having you back as soon as possible. A lot more to talk about. That hour's gone in like 5 minutes, and that's it. We're out of here, Jay. Pass to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Scott. And one thing before we go, speaking about my kidney issues and stuff like that, we're having an organ donation awareness month here on Whistle FM. So tune into Fresh Waves tomorrow morning, Wednesday, with host Brent Masson. I'm going to be sharing my personal organ donation story. We also have some other great stories as well. So tune in every Wednesday, 10 a.m. here on Whistle FM for Fresh Waves. And that's it for Sharing the Burden today.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Sharing the Burden live on 102.9 FM in Stouffville. Please go to sharingtheburden.ca for this and previous broadcasts. Hope you enjoyed the show, and hope you'll share it. Till we meet again, this is Scott saying, have a great day.